podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, hello, here we go, it's the Cop Hype Podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another Cop Hype Podcast. I'm Mick Moran and I'm joined by the Anfield Raps, Craig Anand. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm good, mate. Nice to be on and thanks for getting me on.
No, no worries. I think we had you on back in the audio only days where we had you on like just over like a landline and then the sound cut out and then we had to ring you back and stitch it all together and whatever else. But this is your proper YouTube Cop Hype Podcast debut. So nice one for jumping on.
No worries. Yeah, that was pre-pandemic. That was the day we all got so good at Zoom and video call and all of that. So yeah, I was stood in the corner of our office, which is dreadful for signal anyway, trying to get signal. It was definitely my fault with the signal cutting out. Like,
yeah, that was, I think me and Jay were just like sat there and it was just like, you were just chatting and then it was like, boop, boop, boop. And I was like, no. Was like,
you missed all the good content. You missed all the good bits.
Yeah, that was like the best like 30 seconds that we didn't get. But yeah, we're just going to have a little chat about recent Liverpool stuff. So obviously Stevie G going to Villa, Liverpool season so far, and then a bit about Arsenal coming up on Saturday. But before we do that, what we do on these preview shows is we have a little 2-minute bottle question just to kick off the show. And today's is from Alan on Twitter. And the question is, when is it socially acceptable for your Christmas decorations to go up? Craig, what are you reckoning? What are you thinking?
Oh, God. I'm devastated this question's come because my Christmas tree's up already. It went up on the 14th of November, which is the earliest it's ever gone up. And essentially, my wife sneaked them up when I was upstairs. She basically put them up with the lights on and then said that because it was up already, I couldn't take it down, which is a really good strategy. So we had some friends over and it was a bit embarrassing sort of saying, yeah, my deckies are up. So I don't know if that's socially acceptable. It's in a room where, our neighbors can't see, thank God. But I mean, I was always a 1st of December guy. I'm always 1st of December. I'll get the Christmas music on, get the decorations up. You know, it's Christmas time. This year, I've started early, about two weeks too early, probably.
I think it's a bit more acceptable in current climates, isn't it, with the shit that's going on. So, I mean, I haven't got mine up yet, but I think like last week of November, but then I think I probably will do it like next week, maybe just because I have some lights in the house and whatever
else.
You
know what? Yeah, exactly. I would have understood it sort of last year when we were in lockdown, needed something to sort of cheer us up. To be honest, now that they're up, I love them being up. I love like watching TV and the Christmas tree being there. I have no idea why. It just makes like everything sort of happier in the room, doesn't it? But I'm also worried about like what the comments are going to say about me putting my digressions up on the 14th and what sort of like weird fella you're getting on your podcast.
No, I mean, I wasn't going to, I do watch the rap quite often. I wasn't going to bring up the crisps and the smashing up of the crisps, but.
People don't know what you're talking about. You're basically, I eat the crisps.
Oh, God.
I open the top and I don't like grease on my fingers. So I basically smash the bag all together so the crisps are all in pieces and pour into my mouth. People think I'm an animal for doing it, but I've just always done it. So I'm not apologizing for it. I'm saying don't knock it until you've tried it.
Honestly, I think I was just sat there like I think I was waiting for a moment. I was just watching you, and I was like, and I think Robbo said that, and I was like, I think I just literally stopped everything I was doing. I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
He's a little grass Robbo saying that on the YouTube. He said it on the YouTube whenever I wasn't on with him, and I'm getting comments being like, "What is wrong with you?" Like I'm getting tweets, "What is wrong with you?" And I had no idea what they were talking about. So yeah, try it. Honestly, it's good. It's productive. You get through them quicker.
You can just bang through like a multi-pack of six in like a minute and a half.
yeah, in no time.
But let's get into it then. Obviously, before we get into obviously the Liverpool stuff, let's talk about a little bit about Steven Gerrard and him going to he's back in the Premier League and he's gone to Aston Villa. What have you made of it all? I think it's been a bit like FIFA career mode and footy manager, like when like you're 30 years in the future and like Steven Gerrard's son like signs for Everton or something and you're just like, what the fuck's going on? It's just been a bit crazy, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those things that makes you sort of realise you're a lot older now, that your heroes from when you were a kid are now managers. You know, it's Lampard as well, Gerrard, there's loads of them. Even the talk that Gio van Bronckhorst is going to take over at Rangers after Gerrard as well. He's like a player you sort of grew up watching. But in terms of what I've made of it, I mean, whenever I first heard of the news, I thought it would be a bad idea. Like, I thought, if I'm Steven Gerrard, you know, and I'm thinking about my pathway to Liverpool, I'm thinking about how many trophies I can pick up, I'm thinking about silverware, and I know people can sort of denounce Scotland and talk the league down, but, you know, what he achieved at Rangers so far is, you know, was brilliant in terms of what he came into at the club and where he sort of dragged them up to in terms of league title. But I expected him to leave Scotland with more. I expected him to stay around for the end of the season. They're 5 or 6 points clear. They're in the semi-final of a cup. They're still in Europe. I expect them to leave at the end of the season and leave with another league title and maybe his first cup, because that's something he hasn't done in Scotland, is win a cup yet. I mean, jobs like Villa don't come around every day, and that's the one thing I would say about it all. I think that he's probably looked at it and thought, am I, at the end of the season, am I going to get a much better offer? And, you know, I would say not. Like, it's a big club, Villa. You know, they've got dough, they've got money to spend. You know, they're a team that are underperforming, and they're a team that, you know, Gerrard can come in straight away and inspire, and, you know, get that, you know, the cliche new manager bounce. You know, hopefully in January he'll have a bit of money to spend. But even if he doesn't, they've signed some really exciting footballers that they just haven't been able to get on the pitch yet through injury. So, you know, there's a real opportunity at Villa for him. I just don't see that as the stepping stone before Liverpool. I think he'll still need, unless he performs absolute miracles at Villa, unless he's the best manager that they've had in the past 30 years or even in their history, and he gets them in the Champions League, and, you know, he maybe wins an FA Cup, maybe similar to how Brendan Rodgers has done at Leicester. Unless he does something like that, I just don't see how that's the next sort of, I don't see how he takes over immediately after Klopp. I think he would need another job, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you in a way. I just feel like there's pros and cons to both, isn't he? Like, you want him to come to the Premier League, because if he's gonna falter, then you want it to be not at your club.
Yeah.
But then you don't want him to fuck up Villa and then also fuck up his future potential chances to be the Liverpool manager. And I think even like when Klopp does leave in 2024, which we all hope he doesn't, we all hope he stays a bit longer, then it might be too soon. And obviously only 3 years at Rangers. If he stays at Villa for 3 years as well, then he's only 6 years into his management career, which is quite not very much for a manager these days, is it?
No, I think there's a few things. I think the first thing is I actually wonder whether he sees himself as the person that takes over from Klopp. Like, I wonder if he's looking at it and thinking, well, you know, I don't actually want to come in straight after Klopp, because who would? Like, imagine trying to fill those shoes. Like, I wonder if he's plotting the sort of the manager after the manager after Klopp, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? That he doesn't instantly come in straight away, that, you know, he takes over from afterwards. I think, you know, he did a brilliant job at Rangers, and how he sort of managed to change their culture and how he came in and just sort of, you know, everyone talks about Rangers and Celtic being the top two, but Rangers weren't there. They weren't anywhere near as good as what he had them, the level that he had them performing at. Steven Gerrard will want to win a league at Liverpool. He doesn't want to just be Liverpool manager. He wants to do the thing that he didn't do as a player. And so he'll want to give himself the best opportunity to do that. And I don't think Steven Gerrard takes the Liverpool job if he doesn't believe that he's A, the right man to do it, or B, has the experience and the know-how. And, you know, I think one of the things when I think of like Brendan Rodgers as a manager at Liverpool, one of the things that I felt is he constantly felt as if he needed to prove himself, because he didn't have a playing career beforehand. You know, he wasn't this like big name. And so you see in like the Be in Liverpool documentary and in the interviews, he's a bit like, you know, there's things and you're cringing watching it. And he's just trying to sort of get a point across and prove himself. And that's one thing Gerrard doesn't have to do. He walks into a room and he's Steven Gerrard. And so you'll get the attention of the players. It's just, you know, he's won a trophy now at Rangers. It's about what he does next at Aston Villa. And I mean, what you mentioned there, like not making mistakes at Liverpool. one of the things I liked them being at Rangers, one of the reasons I liked them being at Rangers was because you'll make mistakes up there and he can make them and still win leagues. He can make them and still win the cup. He can make them and still sort of challenge, and he can make them on Rangers watch. And there isn't the glare of England. And, you know, in this job now that he's taken, the glare of the Premier League is on him, the glare of the world's on him, because he's just taken over Aston Villa. So it'll be really interesting to see how he does. I'm excited for him, though. It's nice seeing him in the Premier League. It'll be exciting him coming back to Anfield as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's very soon, isn't it? But I think even like the balls to do it in a way, because like you said, he could have just played it easy and just went, well, I'm happy at Rangers. They're happy with me. I could stay here for another however long he wanted, really, because he had them in a really good way. So he could have stayed there, but he's took the risk. And like I said, every game against Villa now is going to be like Gerrard versus whoever. And like when he goes to Goodison Park and whatever else, it's just going to be.
Any spares for that, by the way?
No, fucking hell. That'll be fucking.
I think it's a good point, and it's something that, like, you know, we should definitely sort of, you know, we should celebrate that with Steven Gerrard, is the fact that in theory, he could have stayed at Liverpool. Managed the 18s, then managed the 21s, then gone into Klopp's backroom staff, then, you know, maybe made himself a sort of key figure within that, and then seeing Klopp sort of promote him from within. But he thought to himself, no, I'm going to leave, I'm going to get the sort of life experience, I'm going to manage a big club in Rangers with expectation, I'm going to shoulder that, and I'm going to make them better and have them challenge game, which he did. And now he's taking another risk, and, you know, he's you know, fair play to him for doing that and deciding, well, actually, rather than sort of try and be a Guardiola or a Zidane, someone like Zinedine Zidane, who worked at Real Madrid for 6 or 7 years and then was promoted to within, Gerrard's gone, actually, I'm going to go out and make it happen for myself. I'm going to go out and make sure that there's no question marks around me and that I'm the best possible manager that, you know, I can be. But when Liverpool come calling, because they will at some stage, Steven Gerrard will probably become manager of Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's like the worst kept secret, isn't it, in the world? Like, it's going to happen eventually. It's just like, when will it be? Like, what year will it be? I think that's the only contentious point, isn't it? Really?
Even the contracts being signed when he took over at Rangers, and then he got the new contract at Rangers, his contract went to 2024, was announced on the same day that Jurgen Klopp's contract was announced, 2024. He signed for Villa and his contract 2024. So there's something there. And I don't know if that's a conspiracy or whether that we're just sort of like putting two and two together and getting five, but that's twice now.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's certainly worth looking at, isn't it, in that way. But let's have a look. We've got a few comments here. So we've got one from Jamie Phillips, Football Chat. Good evening, fellas. I hope Stevie smashes at Villa. We've got John Moore. For me, he had to manage someone else in the Prem before having the chance to come back to Liverpool, which I think we agree with. And then he's also, Jamie's just put, Villa's last game of the season is against City, just saying.
Wow, I did not know that. I wonder if it's home or away. That's really interesting. Because like we've heard Gerrard talking in his press conferences at Rangers, like, everyone knows he's a Liverpool fan. There's no point in him trying to hide it or squash it. But, you know, the amount of times he's talked about Liverpool in his press conference, I remember the one the day after Barcelona, you know, and he's getting asked questions about Rangers, and he's sort of saying, what about the Reds, though, which is funny. But in terms of the Premier League comment, I didn't actually think that was the case. I think, you know, I thought he might, like, there might be sort of a route via, like, the Bundesliga or something like that, where he could take over a team like, you know, I don't know if it's a Dortmund he would get, but like a Leverkusen or someone like that, a Leipzig, someone like that that's exciting and sort of vibrant. And there's, you know, you can sort of see a way of getting into the Champions League and then a way of, you know, performing well in the Champions League and progressing that way. I thought he might look at something like that, but no, Steven Gerrard's throwing himself in at the deep end each time. Fair play to him.
Yeah, and then that, like, last game of the season, just play a nice little flat back 10. Take a 0-0 and Liverpool win the league. So
I wonder what would he be like at the end. No, he'd be professional in front of the camera, isn't he? But
I'd just love him just straight down the tunnel, come out with like a big fucking Liverpool flag.
Yeah, but that's another thing, actually. Like him in the media. Like, one of the things that, like, I've got loads of mates from back home who are Rangers fans, and Like the way he spoke in the media and the way he sort of spoke about Rangers throughout, there was never any excuses. There was loads of accountability. There was loads of challenging the footballers, but also like supporting the footballers within the media and getting the best out of them and squeezing sort of every last drop of them. And that's what I really liked. I thought he sort of really carried himself well and spoke well in a way that just looked like a proper leader. You know, I'm interested to sort of see him with Jeff Shreves and with, you know, when things aren't going well or with Des Kelly and, getting to watch that every week now.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's been a few, hasn't he, so far, even like where I think even recently he got asked, like, is he happy at Rangers? And he was like, yeah, I'm happy. Don't ask stupid questions. And then there's the one where I think like Morelos was like, scored the winner, and he was like, yeah, he's in the dressing room with like twirling his shirt around his head, he's happy, and like just stuff like little tidbits like that you're like, you can't wait to see if like he loses a game and like someone asks him a question and how prickly he can be. Like, I'm looking forward to that because he does speak really well, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. That's something we see from Klopp, and that's it. You know, at times you see opposition fans talk about it and sort of take the piss out of it, but like Ferguson was the master of this, like, you know, sort of keeping the press on side, but also showing them who's boss, and Klopp continually does that. And I think to the certain extent, you saw that from Gerrard in Scotland as well. You know, there's times when journalists have asked him questions and he's gone back at them saying like, it's a ridiculous question. And we've heard that from Klopp loads. So it'll be really, really interesting. And I'm excited to see him match of the day every week. I'm excited to sort of see him now because, you know, Scotland's only up the road, but you just don't tune in it as much. I think we all sort of, you know, we all wanted to see Rangers do relatively well, given that Gerrard's their manager, and now Villa might be a bit of a second team, as long as it's not in direct competition with us at any stage.
Oh yeah, fucking hell.
But if it is, he's doing a brilliant job.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm just conscious we've just spent 16 minutes talking about Gerrard there, so we'll move on slightly then, and obviously onto the thumbnail that is what this podcast is about, is the Reds and the season so far. So I just wanted to ask you what you've made of the season. Obviously, we've played 11 games in the league anyway, 6 wins, 4 draws. Unfortunately, just the 1 defeat, which was the last game against West Ham, which was the most annoying, really, because obviously it was then followed by the massive international break, which feels like an eternity. But like through in the Champions League, 4 games, which we never do, to boss 5-0 wins against United and Watford, and a few draws against Brentford and Brighton, which are also annoying. The draws against City and Chelsea, you can obviously take that on the chin a little bit more. The City one, definitely, maybe not the Chelsea one as much because we're down to 10 men. But what have you made of it as a whole, being fourth in the league so far? It's been not too bad, has it?
No, it hasn't. I'm fine with where we are. I'm gonna mention Alex Ferguson again, and I'm not meaning to continually cite him, but I always think back to one of the things he used to say, where he used to say, like, just get to February, still be in the race, be amongst it, and then kick on from there. And you know, if Liverpool come through, it'll be a test in December, but you know, usually they've done quite well under Jurgen Klopp December, if we forget about the final sort of 6 days of it last year. But usually they've sort of come through that because, you know, the rhythm of games every 3 days. I'm happy enough with how we've gone this season. I think the fact that we're still in the League Cup, I'm quite enjoying it. Feels like a little escape, a little holiday every now and then, getting to see the young players, given a chance, getting to see Divock Origi doing Divock Origi things. Minamino scoring.
Like overhead scorpion kicks, like just craziness.
How are we going to describe Divock Origi to future generations? I have no idea. What a madman.
Just dead shit, but if you needed someone to step up in like the Champions League final, he'll score you the goal. Just
shit, but brilliant. Is he the best shit footballer ever? Is he the shittest best footballer ever? Who knows? But
definitely up there.
the European Cup, the performances and that have been brilliant. There's been like those little moments, the Milan where they peg us back, the Atletico game where they peg us back. But you know what they've done so far in that, like you mentioned, they've literally never done that before, and that shouldn't be sort of, you know, undervalued really, because now it gives us 2 games where they're essentially dead rubbers, and we can rest footballers in what's going to be a busy period. I think in the league, I think the Brighton one's the one that's like, ah, because West Ham are a decent side, and look, every team in this league have been beaten, and Liverpool were going to get beaten at some stage, and They didn't turn up in the second half, and West Ham did. And there was errors over all over the pitch for West Ham to get the goals. West Ham win it, and it's frustrating with this, the errors that have happened. It's frustrating how Brighton peg us back when we look in, you know, we look in so much control there. But you know, we're seeing the league more like the way the league, the Premier League, has always been, rather than the way it's been the past three or four seasons, I think. Yeah. And I think we've been spoiled. Obviously not last season, but it's an anomaly of COVID. I just think we're going to disregard that season forever in my eyes. You know, but before that, the two seasons, the 18-19, the 19-20 season, it was just a machine. And you know, I think we were spoiled by that, that now we believe that that's what you have to do to win a league, and it's actually not. You just have to be amongst it at the end of February. You have to go through this busy Christmas period. You know, we do need to sort of, we do need to be a bit more stable and manage games better, you know, not allow teams to peg us back, particularly at home against the likes of Brighton. But, you know, my only sort of worry really is the injuries in midfield. Now, it looks like from the pictures today, we, you know, we'll be all right. Thiago's around, Milner's back training, Henderson looks as if he's running as well. So hopefully that means we're not going to be too, you know, we're not going to be battling too many injuries. But I'm fine at the moment. I think the next five games or six games are going to dictate what Liverpool's season looks like, really. Coming into January, that game, leading up to that game on the 2nd of January against Chelsea, that's when we're really going to sort of understand where Liverpool, the rest of Liverpool's season is heading, I think.
Yeah, and like you said, it's difficult because you see teams like strengthening, and you're like, you're happy in a way because the Premier League is getting stronger. But then, like you said, like we've been spoiled recently because Liverpool and or City have just absolutely blew everyone away, and it's been like a one or two horse race. Now you understand that this league is a lot stronger this year. So it's lower averages that more teams are going to drop points. And obviously we did against, like I said, against Brentford, and the Brighton one was the most annoying, probably, like you said, because the way that we kind of, that second half went, which was a bit hard to watch at times because we were just getting completely overrun. And then obviously the West Ham game where it was difficult as well, the second half. And like you said, managing those games a bit better, which obviously with players coming back, and especially like Harvey Elliott, like who knows when he's going to come back, but he's back running and whatever else. And he's been a big miss as well, hasn't he? And I mean, the injury news that we had recently, obviously Robertson, I think people on Twitter were saying he got injured yesterday, but then he was up walking around at the end of the game. So we don't actually know what's going on with him at the moment, but and I think Curtis Jones, there was like a piece on the Liverpool website today about his eye injury, which is the club doctor said that they can't put a specific time scale on that, but it's going to be a number of weeks because it's apparently it's like a bit of a weird eye injury. So that's a bit of a mad one, but there's still plenty of strength in there, isn't there, in that midfield?
Yeah, there is. I think just in terms of the point you made around like the teams taking points off each other, first of all, like Chelsea have just been beaten by Burnley, and before that, City were beaten by Palace and Andrea at home to Southampton. So there's going to be teams taking points off each other all over the league, I think, this season. I think in terms of the midfield, like I think keeping Thiago fit over this period would be massive, and sort of getting him back into the rhythm of things, because I think towards the end of last season we really saw what he can offer when he's got a Fabinho in behind him and he's got, you know, Henderson there, you know, with those two over this run, you know, it could be massive, and it'd be massive to sort of see Thiago, you know, make an impact in this league over that period. I'd love nothing more than Keita to get a bit of a run on the side when he comes back, but it's just this continual sort of cycle with him around, you know, gets a few games under his belt and presses and then is injured again. And then the Curtis Jones one sounds like a freak injury. I think I saw something where it's going to be like 10 days. I think they have to sort of keep him until his eye, whatever's happened to his eye. But I think getting Milner back over this period would be massive as well. It's just his age, as always. And it'll bring up the Gini Wijnaldum talk again. I think I saw that over the past couple of weeks, people talking about Wijnaldum. Look, I don't know why we let Wijnaldum go and didn't replace him. but that's done now. And us talking about it and like, you know, agonising over it isn't going to sort of help the situation. What we need now is Liverpool to sort of kick into gear over the December period. And if there's, you know, possibility of a new one coming in January, then going for it. But we can only control the here and now, and the teams are coming up, and there's a big one at the weekend.
Yeah, I think like the genie thing is like people were like clamoring for replacement or for genie to stay, and but everyone obviously understands that. But it's like, yeah, you've just got to live in the here and now and just kind of support the team and see what happens. And obviously Harvey Elliott coming into the fold as well, that was like a nice surprise, wasn't it? Because he proved pretty quickly how good he is, and once he comes back, he can prove that again, can't he?
Absolutely, yeah. I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I knew we were seeing a little bit of him in pre-season, but I still thought they'd maybe sort of hold him back. And the fact that they'd thrown him in straight away, or from the second game onwards, was a, you know, that's a massive statement, I think. And, you know, we were seeing him, I think it's the Burnley game where he brings it inside, or maybe it's Palace where he brings it inside and you know, curls one, does a little step over and curls one that's just so close. And you know, there's the sort of like little glimpses and moments from him that he just looks like he's going to be a superstar. I'm glad to see him running, obviously. And I think immediately after the injury, there seemed to be some sort of talk that it wasn't nowhere near as bad as they'd first thought, and that, you know, he should be recovering quite quickly. But yeah, it'd be brilliant to get him back. He's obviously the reason why they've decided not to go for another forward or another midfielder. I still would have liked one, but that's easy in hindsight for me to say, given the fact that he gets injured against Leeds. But he'll be a nice boost at some stage. Like a new signing, Mick. Like a new signing. That's a joke, by the way.
I don't think that's ever been said on Twitter, you know? Like, it's like a new signing, because you would get people would be fucking banging on your door, somehow found your address and just absolutely fucking turning you to bits.
Don't you be clipping this with that quote there. Don't you be clipping this. He says it's like a new signing, Harvey Elliott. Come on.
I'll use that for the first tweet later to promote the video. But yeah, and obviously we were talking about the starting 11. We might as well have a little chat about what you think it will be for Arsenal. Do you think we might get to see the infamous trio that we all want to see in Hendo, Fabinho and Thiago? Do you reckon that's a possibility?
I'd love it. Like, I always think back to that Everton game where they were just imperious, weren't they? And we were so unlucky in that game. Yeah. But the three of them were brilliant. Thiago was man of the match. You can sort of see that sort of setup allows Thiago to flourish, doesn't it? Because you've got Fabinho right at the back and you've got Henderson doing all the Henderson bits, covering for the fullbacks and allowing Thiago to, you know, to do the things that we've signed them for, really. And yeah, I'd love that. It's just, it's the question of her fitness. I'm sure that they will have had Thiago, you know, doing 90 minutes and behind closed doors, even if it's just for him, even if it's against youth opposition, they'll have been doing something with him. And yeah, hopefully Henderson's come back from international duty, and it's, you know, it's not too bad. He's obviously running today, but I wonder if it's a little trick that we used to see, sort of, again, God, I'm mentioning Ferguson, but Wenger used to do it as well, Mourinho, where you'd see these footballers come back from international duty with a little knock, and actually they're all right. Sadio Mane as well. He was playing today in all of the photos. You know, he's nuts in Nat Phillips. Both of them come back and had us worrying. But yeah, I'd love to see the three of those. And it'd be great to see Milner on the bench as well as another option.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, if Robbo hopefully is fine, do you think it might be the time for Costas to come in? I think there's been like a bit of a weird kind of feeling on Twitter in regards to Robbo. Like, is he out of form? Is he overexerted in terms of how many games he's playing? I don't know, because I think like when I've been watching him, I'm like, I think Tsimikas probably did deserve to start against West Ham, in my opinion anyway. I was surprised that, I mean, I weren't surprised Robbo started, but I was kind of like, I felt a bit bad for Costas because he's done so well when he's been called upon. But you think this one might be ideal for Tsimikas?
I think so. I think it's a hard one with Robertson, because, you know, you feel daft sort of, you know, slagging him off or sort of, you know, hyper-analysing everything in his performances after, you know, what he's done over the past sort of 3 or 4 years. And I think that I think he's probably as much mentally tired as he is physically tired as well.
Yeah.
He's played so much football, you know, over not just going to the Euros with Scotland. It's the qualifiers. It's the schedule last season with COVID. Then before that, it's the you know, it's the season we win the league, and he's relentlessly playing because there's no one there to sort of, you know, come in for him. And the season before that is his breakthrough. It's all of these sort of like, it's all of these building up one after the other without very, very little sort of time off. And you see the difference with Trent. Trent has a full summer off. Obviously, there's a part of that where he's injured, but he's smashing it at the minute. He's, you know, he's in the form of his life. He's gone up a level. Salah gets his first sort of 6-7 week break. You see him go up a level. And I think you've seen Robertson sort of make mistakes where it's not necessarily physically, it's like mentally sort of dropping off. So there's been times where he's been at the scene of the crime where it looks as if he's not held the line and he's stood deep, and it's allowed the opposition team to get in. You know, it looks as if he sort of tires sort of later in the game. And I think we've all been quite excited by Tsimikas, so I don't think it would do him any harm. We're going to need Tsimikas. Whatever happens, we're going to need Tsimikas over the next, you know, 12 games leading up to Chelsea, because like I said before, there's 9 in December, a game every 3 days. So we're going to need him. And I think we all trust him now. We're all quite excited about him. So it feels like we're in a good position finally with left-backs for the first time in my life, having two actual good left-backs.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of the time I've been alive, we've had zero good left-backs.
I know. It's
nice to have two, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just mad how fast, like, footy moves in terms of, like, people's opinions as well. Because, like, before the season started, it was like, are we going to sell Tsimikas because he's not that good? And then he had COVID and he had injuries, and then he comes in and does well. And then Robbo has a little bit of a dip in what's been, like you said, like, immaculate form over however long he's been at the club. And people are just willing to kick Robbo out and go, yeah, let's get Tsimikas in and fuck Robbo off however long. But it's like, I understand it in a way, because Tsimikas is in form and you should just play your players that are in form. But yeah, you've kind of got to sometimes just play your best players and hope that they turn up that day and all of a sudden that form reignites itself. And it's that dilemma, isn't it? Trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think people like new and shiny things, don't they? You know, yeah, it's that thing of, like, I don't want to sort of blame FIFA and things like that, but it's that thing of, oh, well, he's been shite, so we'll just bring him out and throw someone else in, try them. And I think I actually would start Tsimikas this weekend just because it's a home game, because, you know, he's proven in the European Cup that he can sort of handle it. He was, you know, he was great in the group game that he played. And I'd do it just to give Robertson a bit of a rest, because then I think Porto's the next one and he doesn't have to play in that either. And that's a nice sort of 10 days, that'll be 2 weeks then, where he gets where he's not played 90 minutes. I mean, Jurgen Klopp will know much more than me, and he might be listening to this thing and you're a gobshite, Craig, because what Robertson needs is rhythm. And we'll play him against Arsenal, we'll give him a break against Porto, Tsimikas will play then. That's probably what will happen. But no, I'm not sharpening any pitchforks for Robertson. I think that's daft. I think, you know, that this idea that we drop him for a prolonged period or whatever, I just think that we can't even do that anyway with the amount of games that are coming up in later November and December.
Yeah, definitely. As moving unit in the comments says here, Robertson, from what I recall, has had more good games than bad this season.
I think people remember those like little moments, don't they? Because, you know, they're analysed on MNF, or, you know, they're showing, oh, you'll be Carragher and Neville talking about how Robertson's not held the line, or, you know, those are the little moments you forget. He was actually brilliant the first half against West Ham, I thought, going forward. He just looked like the outlet for us. So yeah, it'll all depend on how he comes back after the international duty, definitely.
Yeah, and like you said, the first half against West Ham, he was really good, and I think people are like, well, if it was Tsimikas, because Tsimikas's crossing is better, inverted commas, that he would have maybe put in a better ball, and I can kind of see it, but it's like clutching at straws, and it's like, so you want Robbo's energy to get there, but then you want to just sub him off at that moment and get Tsimikas on just to whip the ball in. And I get Tsimikas's crossing is good, like it is, like he has got an absolute pearl of a left foot, like especially on corners and whatever and free kicks, but it's just mental, isn't it? Like it'll happen at some point where we'll play a game and Robbo will just be like man of the match, and we'll be like, oh yeah, Robbo is the best in the world again. And it's just like, yeah, let's just all believe that anyway, because we all know it to be true. It's just he's going through a bad maybe a slight dip in form, and this is the time where he needs more than ever, rather than just going, well, let's fucking get Tsimikas in because he's got a better cross on him or whatever.
Yeah, but that's all that football doesn't work like that, because you have no idea whether Tsimikas is getting himself into the same position as Robbo, or you have no idea where Tsimikas will have been in the pitch at that time. It just doesn't work like that. It's purely hypothetical, but it's just the internationals really that sort of worry me with Robertson, just how much football he's played. So
yeah,
if he comes back and Klopp looks at him and goes, nope, he looks fit, then no one's kicking off and Robertson's starting against Arsenal. In fact, you probably, when you're looking at the team sheet just for comfort, you're probably looking at it and thinking, oh, I'd rather Robertson just because he's what we know and we have known. So yeah, look, I don't mind either way. I think we beat Arsenal either way if either of those come in and you'll play as good as they can, or as well as they can.
Yeah. I think the only other question then is Jota or Bobby as the nine? What do you think?
I think Firmino's injured, isn't he, for this one? Or I think he's maybe out for the next couple with that hamstring injury. But I mean, I'd rather, if he was fit, I would rather Firmino, just because of what we've, I think Firmino's been brilliant this season, to be honest. I think he's been doing all of the things that, we've come to expect and from him in terms of, you know, that cog in the machine work, the dropping in deep and hassling the defensive midfielder, the winning it back and defending from the front, you know, the pressures and the pressing, all of those things. But he's added goals to his game. I think he must be up there in terms of like league goals per 90 minutes that he scored this season. And that's been one of the best things about this season, hasn't it? The goals from all over. And the fact that we're able to have this conversation around whether we'd rather Jota or Firmino. I know Firmino's injured at the moment, but when he comes back, hopefully he'll be back and ready to play a bit in this Christmas period. I think Jota, there's still another level to Jota. And I think we saw that for about a month and a half just before he got injured last season. And that's why, you know, even when he's scoring this season, people are saying, well, he isn't in the game as much, but you know, he's pressing up there, he's working really hard, he's poaching. You know, 20 years ago, that used to be what you'd expect from a... Yeah. You know, everyone would be saying, didn't he do brilliant? He worked really hard and he got the goal as a poaching striker. Or, you know, we used to say, oh, if you've got a one and two, if you've got a striker that scores one and two, then you're doing well. Well, we've got essentially three or four at the moment that could be seen to be doing that. And I mean, Divock Origi, if you want to throw him in there, he's not far off at the moment with his League Cup goals and his goal last week.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, I've been like on Twitter that much and reading into other injuries that I completely forgot that actually Firmino was injured. It's just me being an obhead, so ignore me.
I know, but that's more of like, I think, like, obviously we get worried by that, but I think the fact that we have Jota and we trust Jota, and you can still play a front three that feels like the front three because of what Jota's done since he signed. And, you know, like, under the radar, he scored a few important goals this season, and or he scored a few goals this season that, you know, I know he gets the one against Brentford and then it turns out not to be all that important, but you know, he's a really good player and he works really hard, and you've got Mo Salah up there as the best striker in the world at the moment. You've got Sadio Mane who's been in really good form in terms of his goal scoring. So yeah, look, you know, we've got reasons to be excited up front. If I'm the lads playing up top, I'm looking at the back and saying, look, we're doing our job here. You need to sort of, you know, we need to sort it out and ensure that we're not dropping 2-0 leads in games.
Yeah. I mean, it's craziness. I mean, what we've come from and what now we've got just players up front who are just absolutely the top of the game and one of the best in the world in their positions, which is just like, should we rubbing our hands with glee, shouldn't we? And apart from instead of just being like really like fucking hell, oh, we haven't got Firmino this game, or we'll have to do with Jota, like you said, like he can be out of games, but then he'll pop up with a goal. And like you said, like 10, 15 years ago, that is like, if a striker's had a shit game, then he scores a winner in the last minute, he's the hero. So it's like, if we put him in there more often than not, he's going to score, isn't he? Because he is that good. And I like you said, that extra level that he can go to, I can't actually wait to see that, because he's young enough and under Klopp, hopefully for the next three years and more, it's scary how good he can be, because he's got all the tools, I need to be one of the best.
He definitely has, yeah. Like, and I know Pep Linders called him the pressing machine, but I think he's so much more than that. And you can sort of see why they signed him at the time. They signed him at that sort of sweet spot where they, you know, just before they believe he'd propel himself to the next level. And he was doing that for the first 2 or 3 months at Liverpool before he got injured. And I think we'll see, you know, we'll see more of that from him this season. Definitely. I think he's, you can sort of see where his trajectory would end up the same as someone like Sadio Mane's. It's whether, you know, a player like him can then take it to the Mo Salah level, which is what Mo Salah's doing now. But, you know, when it feels unfair to sort of judge anyone against Mo Salah, because he's got the best goals per game ratio of anyone at Liverpool ever in their entire history. So I think we just need to sort of, people need to just enjoy more, enjoy this football team, enjoy having these, you know, three or four up top instead of worrying about the fifth that we don't have or that we didn't sign. You know, enjoy watching Mo Salah and Sadio Mane and Diogo Jota every week, and enjoy Bobby Firmino coming back and being the fourth option. Because, you know, these are sort of, you know, some of these are like once in a generation footballers, Mo Salah certainly. And, you know, like you said, there's a time, you know, throughout most of my childhood where you maybe had one hero up front, or you had maybe none at all, and you're relying on a Steven Gerrard in midfield to sort of pull you out of the dirt. But, you know, now we've got three or four lads up there that are, you know, three of them are certainly Liverpool legends, and one has, you know, absolutely everything in his locker to ensure he becomes one as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I couldn't have said that better myself. So I think we'll leave that there, and I'll ask you for your score predictions before we go for Arsenal. What do you reckon?
I think it's going to be 3-1. I think there'll be goals, and I think hopefully Liverpool have tightened up their defence. I think Arsenal are on a much better run than they have been. They look a much better team than they did earlier in the season. So we're probably getting them at a difficult time. But you know, if the Reds do what they can and sort of perform at the level they can, or even three quarters of the level that they can, then, you know, they'll be Arsenal. So yeah, 3-1 and a couple more goals from Mo Salah to start another run of goal scoring like he had before the Brighton game.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Just to give him a little shove to get to try and beat that record that he got in his first year. But moving unit in the comments agrees with you, Craig. So yeah, there we go. I'm gonna go for 3-0. You know, I know Arsenal have been in, like you said, in good form. Like, I think last five, I think they've won three, drawn two, which is like madness, because like the start of the season, like they started off really badly, right down the bottom. Arteta's like next to get the boot, and you're like, fucking hell, they're actually in a really bad place. And it just shows, like, once you get your good players back and you get back into a more of a rhythm, your new players start to gel a little bit more, then the quality kind of raises head. And they've been good, haven't they? And I think it's going to be, like, especially being at home, I think that's why I'm happy we're home for this one, especially after the international break. If we were away to Arsenal after an international break, I'd be a bit more worried. But getting back to a full Anfield against them, and kind of especially after the West Ham game, to kind of prove a point a little bit as well against a good informed team. I think the third in the form table, which I don't know what that fucking means, but I had a look earlier, it means fuck all. But
yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's a half-5 kickoff, the fact that it'll be under the lights, with us now being in winter, and I think there'll be a real sort of atmosphere and edge to it, because Arsenal still feels like a big game. It still feels like it's one of the top four coming, even if they haven't been finishing there. And like you said, they've been doing well recently, but Liverpool should have a point to prove. And I think in general this season, Liverpool have a point to prove, bigger picture, because of what happened last season. You know, they've got Van Dijk back. They've got Salah scoring goals. So, you know, let's make sure it all counts this season. And you know, proving that point starts on Saturday night, doesn't it? I'm bang up for it, and I'm sure they will be as well.
Yeah, can't wait. But yeah, we'll leave it there for this episode. So thanks to everyone in the comments, and nice one to Craig for his Cop Eye Podcast YouTube channel debut after what, 2 years before afterwards with the old audio shit back in the day. But yeah, appreciate you jumping on, Craig. Appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll get you back on again very soon.
Nice one, enjoyed that.
Cheers. But yeah, we'll be back on Sunday to have a little chat about, like, hopefully what Craig said, a boss little Liverpool win. Hopefully 3-1, 3-0 will do me. And yeah, up the Reds. See you next time.
Social Podcast Network.